All right. Good morning, everyone. Let's begin. Mrs. Shulman is not here this morning, so I'll make the cell phone announcement. A reminder just to shut your cell phones off or to put it on vibrate. And if you need to take a call, to please leave the base medrash. So with that, okay, I feel I discharged my obligation. So with that, let's begin. Our shir this morning is dedicated by Leah Natan Berry in memory of Eliezer Avram Tzvi ben Psach Yaleib and Avram Chaim ben Gedalia. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the neshamas will have an aliyah and the family a nechama. So with that, let's begin. So I'm going to beg your indulgence this morning. I know this is normally a Tehillim shir, but I'd like to focus a little bit this morning on something that intrigued me very much in the parasha. It caught my eye on Shavuos for a couple of moments, and then after looking into it a little bit more, I think that there's, obviously, to say that there's profundity, that's obvious. Every word of the Torah, you know, oozes with profundity, but that I think we'll begin to see that in what otherwise appears to be a fairly mundane or regular detail, the Torah HaKadosh, the Ribbono Shel Olam, is teaching us something exceptionally amazing. So in this week's parsha in Noso, one of the amazing parts that we are, one of the amazing halachos that we make reference to is the Nazir. So the Nazir is the individual, very quickly in a nutshell, the Nazir is the individual who undertakes somewhat of an ascetic lifestyle. He decides to go ahead and refrain from drinking any kind of wine. He refrains from cutting his hair. He refrains from going ahead and participating in anything to do with caring for the dead. He essentially, why does an individual do this? So an individual does this presumably to try to attain some higher level or loftier level of spirituality. The duration of one's Nazirus, the duration of a Nazirite vow, so the Talmud explains that Stam Nazirus, an unqualified Nazirite vow, lasts for 30 days. But the truth is, an individual could become a Nazir for as long as they want. Perhaps the most well-known Nazir was, of course, Shimshon. Shimshon was unique in that, actually, this week's Haftorah, in that Shimshon was what we call a Nazir Mibeten. He was already declared to be a Nazir in utero. Under normal circumstances, that cannot happen. A Nazirite vow is something that a person has to undertake himself. But again, Shimshon was an exception. He was ordained from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that it should be this way. So this is the Nazir. So again, can't drink wine, abstains from going ahead and cutting his hair, and abstains from contact with the dead. So in number one, the Torah discusses a very specific circumstance. Torah says, so the Nazir is going about his business. He's in the middle of his Neder Nazirus, of his Nazirite vow. And the Torah writes, V'chi yamos meis alav bepesa pit'om. So literally translated, if someone in his presence dies unexpectedly. So it sounds like it's happening over here is what? The Nazir is minding his own business, and someone, Nebuch, dies right in his proximity. Bepesa pit'om, and as a result, v'time rosh nizro, and he becomes tummy, he becomes ritually impure. So again, we're talking about a very specific circumstance over here. The Nazir, it's not like he went to a levaya, he didn't go to a funeral, he didn't go to a cemetery, he's minding his own business, and Nebuch, someone dies. Now remember again, we're not going to get too much into the halachic technicality over here. Just because someone dies in your proximity does not automatically make a person ritually impure or tamei. To keep it simple, the Nazir is under the same roof with someone who passes away suddenly. The Nazir had absolutely no idea that this was coming. Person passes away, and now the Nazir is tamei. Now the Nazir is ritually impure. So what happens? V'gilach rosho b'yom taraso b'yom ashi yigachenu. So the Torah essentially says, so we'll just translate the psukim and then we'll discuss the process outside. So literally translated, he shall shave off the hair of his head on the day of his purification. U'bayom ashvini yigachenu. On the seventh day, he shall shave it off. He shaves his head on the seventh day. U'bayom ashmini, on the eighth day. Yavish te torim oshnei b'nei yona lakoin ha-pesach ha-amoid. On day number eight, he brings a series of sacrifices. Two turtle doves or two young pigeons at the entranceway of the Mishkan of the Beis HaMikdash. Va'asa kohen, the kohen takes these two birds. Va'asa kohen echad l'chatas ve'echad la'ola. Kohen makes one of them into a chatas, a sin offering. One of them into an ola. Anola means a burnt offering. V'chiper alav me'asher chata ala nefesh v'kidash esro sho bayom hahu. And ultimately, again, what does the Kohen do? The Kohen makes one of them into a sin offering, and we'll just use a little translation over here. He goes out to atone on his behalf for sinning by coming into contact with the dead, and he shall sanctify his head on that day. V'hizer la'ashem es yimei nizro. He shall consecrate to the Lord the period of his abstinence. V'hevi keves ben shnaso li'ashem v'ayamim harishonim yiplu ki tamei nizro. So essentially what happens over here, his Nazirite vow was brought to a screeching halt by circumstances seemingly beyond his control. So what does that do? So essentially, that ends the current period of Nazirus. That ends the current vow. He brings a series of offerings. He cuts his hair, brings a series of offerings. One of them burnt offering and Ola, one of them a sin offering. And then what? He starts again. He starts all over. The shaving of the head, by the way, represents starting over of the Neder Nazirus. And there are a number of things that are intriguing about this. So I'll tell you what caught my eye, which I'm sure caught your eye as well, which is... Why? Okay, that's always a safe question, right? Adding to Judaism. Why? Right? Specifically, what's most intriguing about this? Right? Why is he bringing a sin offering? Remember again, I understand if the Nazir decides to go to a funeral, the Nazir decides to go to a cemetery, the Nazir decides to go into a hospital, knowing full well that people die in hospitals, unfortunately, all of the time. So I understand if he is negligent or derelict in his Nazirite responsibilities, and then he comes in contact with a corpse, I understand why there's culpability. I understand why there's liability in that case. I understand why there's a sin offering. But remember, we're talking about a very specific case here of a Nazir who is doing everything he is supposed to be doing. He's minding his own Nazirite business. He's upholding his personal sanctity. Nebuch, someone dies in his proximity. That's why even the Torah itself, the Pesah Pit'om means, you know, like suddenly, right? Really suddenly, meaning there's absolutely no way he could have foreseen these events and planned differently. So as such, ultimately again, why is there a sin offering involved here? But the truth is, there's a more profound question, which is in general, in Jewish law, we have a concept of ones rachmana patre. Ones rachmana patre means that at the end of the day, when you are the victim of extenuating circumstances, you are exempt from liability. We'll discuss this in greater depth, but ones means circumstances beyond your control. Not accident, but even further, even a more heightened level. Totally, I could not have done anything to prevent these circumstances. This seems to be what we call the case of ones, extenuating circumstances. Again, under almost any other area of halacha, if there is an ones, an extenuating circumstance, you are exempt from liability. If I was writing the Torah, which would be in big trouble if I was writing the Torah, but if I was writing the Torah, I would have said, Ribono Shel Olam, listen, if the Nazir intentionally defiles himself, I get it, there's a sin offering, but here the guy is doing everything he's supposed to. You can't control what happens around you, and even though he might have taken the necessary precautions to stay away from anything associated with death and dying, you can't control Nebuch, if the person who is standing next to him passes away. I would say this is a case of ones, extenuating circumstances. There should be full exemption. Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to teach us something. There is a message in here. And like everything else in the Torah, you see, the beautiful part of our Torah, the Torah is multi-dimensional. There is a stated message in everything, and then there is a nuanced message in everything. So we understand the stated message. Nazir has to start all over again. But what is the nuanced message? What is the Ribono Shel Olam teaching us through this fascinating yet somewhat complicating construct? So I want to share with you a couple of different approaches with this. So take a look first at Rashi. Rashi the Chizkuni understands this in the following way. Rashi says, number two, Bepesa Ze'ones. So first of all, Rashi says explicitly that we're not talking about accidents. We're talking about extenuating circumstances. Ones, pit'om, zeshogig. So Rashi actually, again, we're not going to get too into this, but Rashi actually understands that we're talking about two different sets of occurrences. Pesa means ones, extenuating circumstances. Shogig means an accident. Was there ever seen an accident, a shogeg and an ones? You know, the Gemara Maseches Makos, I should have included this on the sheet, but the Gemara Maseches Makos discusses the paradigmatic example of accident. What's the paradigmatic example of the accident? So the Torah says it, person goes into the forest to chop wood, right? And what happens? V'nashal ha-barzel mikato, either the axe head flies off the handle, or a wood chip flies splinters off and kills someone. That's the paradigmatic example of the accidental killer. What's the halacha with the accidental killer? So Reuven's chopping wood in the forest, his axe head falls off, or a wood chip splinters and kills Shimon. What does Reuven have to do? Goes. He goes to Ir Miklat. He has to go to a city of refuge. Excellent. He goes to a city of refuge. So the Gemara asks a very simple question. The Gemara says, I don't understand. What's the question?
Why doesn't he go to a city of refuge?
Well, it's an accident.
Yeah.
It's an accident. It's unpredictable. After all, again, we're all familiar with the famous adage. Not so famous adage. Accidents happen, right? Accidents happen. To which the Gemara says, accidents happen to people who are not vigilant. The Gemara says one phrase. Di'iboy lei li'iyune. Reuven, you're chopping wood. You're chopping wood. You know that sometimes axe heads fly off the handle. You know that when you're chopping wood, so wood chips splinter off. Di'iboy lei li'iyune. Do your ocular intake. Look around. Look around. What's happening around you? Be aware of your circumstances. Be cognizant of other people. Be vigilant with what is occurring around you. A lack of vigilantness, right? A lack of awareness is not an exemption when bad things happen. Rashi goes on, he says in number 3, and that's what's happening over here. Me'asher chata ala nefesh, shelo nizhar mitumas meis. Rashi seems to understand that what the Torah is telling the Nazir is, you could have avoided this. How am I supposed to avoid it? If I'm the Nazir and Nebuch, somebody just passes away next to me, whatever it is, the Rebbe Shalom clearly feels that the Nazir could have taken the proper precautions. The Chizkuni says in number 4, same idea. So the Chizkuni understands it over here that the way you become ritually impure is not just by simple proximity. In order to become ritually impure from a corpse, you have to be under the same roof. So if you're a nazir, ultimately, again, you should check before you go into a structure. You should check before you go under a roofed structure. So Rashi and the Chizkuni understand that the nazir is held accountable. Why? Because he wasn't vigilant enough. Life, successful living, is all about vigilance. And this becomes the theme, according to Rashi and the Chizkuni, in this particular section. The Ribono Shel Olam is teaching us, sometimes things happen, and things go wrong, and we say, Nebuch, accident. Accident is not an excuse. Accident is not the patur. Accident is not an exemption from responsibility. Accident means I'm not being vigilant enough in life. Now again, I want to be clear. There is a layer that is above accident that we call ones. Ones means, again, we all know, there are times in life where you can take every single proper precaution and then some, and still things happen that are simply beyond your control. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, fine, over there, I'll exempt you. Over there, there's no responsibility. But over here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us the need to live our lives with eyes wide open. The need to be vigilant. And this, the Mefarshim, the Bali Musar, spend so much time about this. If you remember again, I'm sorry, I should have put much more on this sheet. So again, I'm sure all of you have learned Mesilas Yesharim, right? The Ramchal's Path of the Just. So remember again, the first chapter in this, if not, when we finish Tehillim, we'll do that in Meretz Hashem. So the first chapter in the Ramchal's Mesilas Yesharim is the Shar HaZihirus. So the Ramchal says, what's Zihirus? So we normally translate Zihirus as?
Being careful.
So that is true, but he develops this idea, and he gives an incredible metaphor. He says, you know what life is like? He says, life is like walking on the edge of a cliff. He says, you could walk on the edge of the cliff, as long as what? That's true, as long as you don't fall. Excellent, right? You could walk on the edge of the cliff as long as you are exceptionally attentive to every single step. If you're careful where you're putting your feet down, you're going to be just fine. But the moment you decide to close your eyes, and the moment you decide to take a break, and the moment you decide to stop being aware, is nebuch when the person falls off the cliff. The Ramchal says, life is one 120-year walk on the edge of the cliff. And every single step requires awareness. And every single step requires vigilance. And it's present vigilance, and it's future vigilance. Because you know that when we make decisions, it's not just enough to think about those decisions in the here and now. I have to think about what? The future ramifications of my decisions as well. You know, it's very hard in life to be a thoughtful person. Because when you're a thoughtful person, every single thing gets so much forethought. Every single word, and every single decision, and every single step. But that's the pathway to successful living. Without attentiveness in the way we live life, we fall off the cliff. Without attentiveness, I end up in the wrong places in the wrong time. Without attentiveness, then at the end of the day, I end up making all of the wrong decisions. Without attentiveness, I end up losing momentum on the beautiful things that I want to accomplish. Because remember, what's happening over here? The Nazir, we'll discuss if he's a good guy, not a good guy. But the Nazir, let's assume for right now, he's a good man. He's a good individual trying to gain more holiness in his life. And what happens? What happens? See, if you can, I made a decision, I'm a Nazir, I'm doing good. Then what happens? He falls asleep at the wheel for just a moment. He stops paying attention just to one step. And everything that he built up is now stopped. Everything that he built up now falls by the wayside. He has to start all over again. And this becomes the incredibly profound, nuanced, meaningful message. Life requires attentiveness. We have to think before we speak. We have to think before we act. We have to have a plan. We have to know where we're going, what we're doing. And every step we take in life needs to be measured. Because if it's not, not only will you not get to where you want to go to, but even the things that you have accomplished will simply implode. They simply crumble down. You can't gain true momentum in life without present and future attentiveness. A successful life is a life that is lived with constant awareness. That's Rashi and the Chizkuni. So a message again, not just for the Nazir, but a message for us as well. The Gemara takes a different approach. Take a look at number 6. So this, the truth is, we could spend the whole time just on this Gemara. We won't, but it's you'll think about it more even after the shir. So again, the Gemara quotes Gemara Maseches Nedarim number 6. V'chi pra'alav me'asher chatal ha'nefesh. Amar Abaye, Shimon HaTzadik v'Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Elazar HaKafar, kulon shita achosein. All of these great rabbis, Shimon HaTzadik, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar HaKafar, all agreed, the Nazir chote havi, that the Nazir is a sinner. The Nazir is a sinner. What does that mean? The Nazir is a sinner? So look at this. Shimon HaTzadik Rabbi Shimon HaDamra. So the Gemara quoted Shimon HaTzadik Rabbi Shimon before. We're going to focus on Rabbi Elazar HaKafar. Listen to this. Disanya. Rabbi Elazar HaKafar, Rabbi Omer. V'chiper alav me'asher chota ala nefesh. Quotes our pasuk. Quotes our pasuk. So again, remember, same case. The Nazir is going about his business. Someone dies. Unfortunately, again, brings his entire Nazirite enterprise to a screeching halt, has to start over, brings a sin offering. Asks Rabbi Elazar, why is he bringing a sin offering? What has this man done wrong? V'chi be'ezo nefesh chatazeh. What did he do wrong? Elo, says the Gemara, shetzir atzmo min hayayin. What's the sin that the Nazir committed? He refrained from drinking wine. He refrained from drinking wine. Now, what's the mitzvah in the Torah to drink wine? Right? You're allowed to drink wine. There's no mitzvah in the Torah. Some might argue with this, right? But there is absolutely no mitzvah in the Torah to drink wine. There's a license. There's a license to drink wine. We have wine built into every single one of our... You know, understand that in a purist model, wine is part of everything we do from cradle to grave, right? When by a bris milah, there's a cup of wine. The Gemara Maseches Moed Katan discusses that the way we don't do it anymore, what they used to do by burial practices, is after burying the dead, the mourners would come back, The first thing they would have when they came back to the home was what the Gemara calls a kos shel tanchumen, a cup of consolation, which essentially was a very, very, very large cup of wine. That was the first thing they would drink when they got back. Why? Again, in an effort, ultimately, again, it's an amazing thing. We give the little baby after his bris milah a little bit of wine to soothe the pain. And we give people, when they bury their dead, a little bit of wine or a lot of wine to soothe their pain as well. It's a much greater motif in terms of why HaKadosh Baruch Hu created wine, which in a very large sense is to sometimes take the edge off of life just a little bit when used in moderation and used in the right way. I'm sorry? I don't know. I don't know why it stopped. Yeah, I don't know when it stopped or why it stopped. I don't know. So the Gemara says it as follows. Rabbi Elazar HaKafer says, what's the sin? What's the sin ultimately? By the way, it also only applies to the Avelim. It doesn't apply if like you're Menachem Avon. You know, you can't sort of point that out. So Rabbi Elazar HaKafer says as follows. He says, what did the Nazir do wrong? He says, Shetzi'as menayayin. He refrained from drinking wine. V'alo kavachomer. If a person goes ahead and abstains from drinking wine, the Torah calls him a sinner. If one goes ahead and abstains from other physical, earthly, or material pleasures, all the more so he's called a sinner. So Rabbi Elazar HaKafer says over here that the nazir is not a lechatchila. The nazir is not something we aspire to. The nazir, in fact, Rabbi Elazar HaKafer says, is a sinner. He's doing it wrong. Now again, we'll discuss why he needs to do what he does. Rabbi Elazar HaKafer understands that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want us to be an ascetic people. You see, I want to tell you something very important. Sometimes, you know, I very much enjoy reading biographies of Gedolim. Reading biographies of great people gives you a window into their greatness. Usually, today there's a little bit of an issue in that we feel compelled to deify our great people. Like, it's not enough that Gedolim are Gedolim. You have to, like, erase any little bit of, like, humankind from them. So the stories often always sound the same, which is privation, right? They had nothing, enjoyed nothing in Olam Hazeh, and again, slept on the bench learning Torah the whole day from the time that they were 2.5 years old, which is fine for some people, but understand, that's not a model. That's not something we are supposed to replicate. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want us to be malachim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be human beings. And as such, as human beings, we have physical needs. As human beings, we have material needs. As human beings, we enjoy material things. And as we've spoken about many times, as long as those material things are enjoyed, bikedusha ubitara, in a way that is appropriate, in a way that serves as a bridge to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and not as a divide, then not only is there a license for it, but in fact, it's actively encouraged. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, I think I mentioned it, there's the famous Maisa Rav Kook. Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kook was stranded in Switzerland during World War I. He went to fundraise for the Yeshuva in Eretz Yisrael, and he was stranded. So there's a story that's told that he one time asked his host, where he was staying by, to see the Alps. He wanted to see the Alps. So the host was a little bit surprised. I don't remember if Rav Kook was the Rav of Yerushalayim or of Yafo. It was before he was chief rabbi. I don't remember where he was. So the host was a little bit surprised. The Rav lives in Eretz Yisrael. Why do you need to see the Alps? So there are different versions of the story. But essentially Rav Kook says, what do you think? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu just created the Alps for the Gentiles? You know, Eretz Yisrael, Brooklyn, Lakewood, Baltimore, that's for the Jews. That's for the Jews. Everything else in the world is for the Goyim, is for the Gentiles. It's not true. The Moshe created a beautiful world, a magnificent world, with so much material beauty and so many material comforts. He just created it for everyone but his chosen people? No, it's not. Everything that's created in the world is created for us. But we have the challenge of enjoying it and using it responsibly. Rabbi Elazar HaKafer says, Nazir, you're a sinner. You're a sinner because you are not modeling the right behavior. You have made yourself into an ascetic. You have sworn off the permissible pleasures of this world. Remember again, wine, you see this in the writings of Chazal, but wine often is like
the paradigm, it's like the epitome of material pleasures. By prohibiting wine, essentially what the Nazir is making the statement of, I'm distancing myself from material pleasures in this world. That might be fine for individuals, and there are individuals, and there are Gidoli Hadar who lead lives of austerity, because ultimately, again, that's what their spiritual accomplishments and spiritual pursuits demand of them. But that's why they are the Gidoli Hadar. That's not the model for the common individual. And that's what Elazar HaKafir says, Nazir, you're going to bring a sin offering. Why? Very simply. Why do you bring a sin offering? Because you're a sinner. Because what you're doing is incorrect. In fact, the Gemara ends off by saying, Mikan, the Gemara said, look at the last line in number 6, Mikan, Kalayoshev betainis nikrachote. Whoever sits and fasts is called a sinner. Now what does the Gemara mean over here? A person who thinks that the way to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is through self-affliction, ultimately, again, is a sinner. You've got it wrong. You know, there's a famous Maisa of a Chassid who once came to Rabbi Yisrael of Brzezin, who said, Rabbi, I committed in a particular Aveira. So he said, but Rabbi, don't worry, I've been fasting for whatever it is, 20 days, I eat at night, I fast during the day. So Rabbi Yisrael of Brzezin looked at him and said, tell me, just because you made a mistake, you have to keep punishing your body? As what Rabbi Yisrael of Brzezin is saying is, this idea that somehow self-flagellation and punishment is the way, or privation is the way to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is not really a Jewish ideal. It's not really a Jewish value. We have to do tshuva. Of course, if I make a mistake, I have to figure out how to go and right that mistake. But lav dafka, punishing myself or depriving myself is the way to do that. Just as an aside, if that's the case, then why does a person become a Nazir? Why does a person become a Nazir? So remember, again, not our topic, but the Mefarshim bring down, sometimes a person is so lost in life. Sometimes the pendulum has swung so far in the wrong direction that you have to swing it back dramatically as well. The goal in life is always to land in the middle. The Rambam says, the Derech HaMamutza. Of course, the great challenge of life is, who determines the middle, right? That's always the great challenge. Who determines the middle? Okay, so that's an ongoing debate, who determines the middle, right? Everybody's normal, and if you're different than me, you're not. I'm normal. I'm the baseline for normal. Everyone else who's not like me is not normal. Right? I'm the middle of the... So sometimes a person has to kind of swing this pendulum in an extreme direction in order to land back somewhere in the middle. Remember, again, becoming a Nazir is not a permanent state. Becoming a Nazir is a lifestyle you undertake for a certain amount of time. So who became the Nazir? It's quite possible someone who had gotten so lost in the world of materialism. A person who had made so many mistakes because of overindulgence swings the pendulum in the opposite direction, becomes a Nazir for some amount of time in an effort to what? Land back somewhere in the middle, recalibrate and find that right balance, ultimately, again, in his relationship with the material world. So according to Elazar HaKafir, this is very dramatic. What's the message over here to the Nazir? The message to the Nazir is, you took the wrong path. So fine, while you're going about your business, but now again that your Nazirite vow comes crashing down, you came in contact with a corpse, this is an opportunity to highlight to you, what you're doing is not right. Again, you have the right to do it, you have the license to do it, you have a cheshbon, I'm sure, for it, but this is not the right approach. This, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to us, is not what I want from you in life. I don't want you to be ascetic, and I don't want you to be angelic. I want you to be human beings. I want you to live in the material world, I want you to enjoy the material world. I just ask of you that you enjoy it with responsibility and you enjoy it in a way that brings you closer to me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and not distances you. If you take a look at number 7, along this same theme, so the Toldos Yitzchak writes as follows. He takes this idea just a little bit further, and he says, if you skip down, he says, V'nucha l'hashiv, it's actually 2, 4, 6 lines from before it ends. Last two words on the line. V'nucha l'hashiv. So what the Toldos Yitzchak, again, it's a much longer piece, but essentially what he says is, I don't understand Rebbe Elazar's approach, because the Torah speaks about the Nazir in certain glowing terms as well. Torah calls him Kadosh, Torah calls him holy. So how can you say that he's a sinner if God himself labels such an individual as being holy, as Kadosh? And the Toldos Yitzchak is Rav Yitzchak Karo, who was a nephew of Rav Yosef Karo. Rav Yosef Karo was the author of the Shulchan Aruch, so Toldos Yitzchak was his nephew. See, he writes as follows. V'nucha l'hashiv, shemitzad echad hu kadosh, umitzad echad chote. This is a very profound, only Jews could speak like this, right? So the answer is, they're both right. The Nazir is both holy and he's a sinner. Mitzad nafsho hu kadosh, shanefesh le'musa b'sheti badal mitayvas ha'olam. On one hand, from a purely soulful perspective, from a soul perspective, he's holy. Why is he holy from a soul perspective? Because the soul thrives when there's an emphasis on spirituality to the exclusion of materialism. The soul is a non-material entity. And as such, again, the soul, the more a person distances themselves ultimately, again, from materialism, the stronger the soul becomes. So on one hand, from the soul's perspective, he's a tzaddik, he's righteous. On the other hand, the body is only complete when a person is attentive to their material needs. Again, not overindulgence, but a person is attentive to the material needs. And so what happens? So here's the problem. The Nazir, from a soul perspective, is a great tzaddik, because he is choosing to place the majority of the emphasis on his spiritual identity, on his soul. From the physical perspective, he is a sinner. Why? Because he's ignoring the physical or material needs of his life. And therefore again, Ela Shia Be'emtza. Be'emtza. So Toldos Yitzchak says, what's the goal? The goal is to be in the middle. Ultimately, Ba'achila U'Bishtia. You should eat, you should drink. V'yochal basar v'yishteyah. You should eat meat, you should drink wine. Kiroi libriyas gufo. In accordance with what you need for your body. Imkei mitzad ha'nefesh ha'maskelas ha'nazir nikra kodesh. Kadosh. So from a soulful perspective, the Nazir is called holy. Umitzad ha'guf nikra chote. From a physical perspective, he's called a sinner. Umasha amar. So again, he goes on. So the Toldos Yitzchak is really building on Rabbi Elazar HaKafar. Rabbi Elazar HaKafar says, what's the message here? See, here's what's amazing. You see, the Ribono Shel Olam understands that sometimes we have to be extreme. Sometimes, every parent knows this, that sometimes my child does something that requires a punishment that is really much greater than the actual infraction. Why? Because the infraction represents a flawed mindset. And for me to repair the flawed mindset of my child, they require greater repercussions. The act in a vacuum may only warrant a punishment of X. But because ultimately, again, if my child doesn't understand the negativity and the danger in these behaviors, they're going to go down a wrong path that could lead to many other things, the punishment has to be X plus Y. So the idea being that sometimes you have to live in extremes. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu understood, sometimes a person gets so lost in the world of the material that they need to become a Nazir. Sometimes you just have to go ahead and swear off the material things in this world in order to right yourself. I've gotten so lost in this world, I've gotten so lost in the gashmius, in the guf of existence, that I just need to go to an extreme. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, just understand, first of all, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I don't like extremes. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, number one. And number two, the goal is not to live in the extremes. The goal is to live in the middle. The goal is to learn ultimately, again, how to balance the needs of a soul and of a body at the same time. The goal, ultimately, again, is not to be malachim, is not to be angels, but the goal is to be human beings. According to Rabbi Elazar HaKafar, according ultimately, again, to the Toldos Yitzchak, this is a message not only for a Nazir, but it's a message for us as well. It's all about moderation. It is much easier to live in the extremes. Let's understand that. Extremism is always easier. Why? because it's much easier to live in a world of black and white. Black and white is, one moment, black and white is always easier. Black and white is always easier. It is much more difficult to live in a world of gray. Because where there's gray, sometimes there's uncertainty. Where there's gray, there are unknowns. Where there's gray, sometimes you have to use your seichel and make decisions, and sometimes they're right, and sometimes they're wrong. But that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world that's not black and white. I mean, it's black and white to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not black and white to us. He thrusts us into a world of gray because He trusts us to find a way to navigate through it. He trusts us with the kochos and the abilities and the traits that He's given us to find that road, that path of moderation. He trusts us ultimately again to somehow, some way, find that balance. Nazir, I'm not happy with what you're doing. I understand. I'm going to give you the allowance to do it for a certain amount of time in order to get your pendulum swung back the other way so you can get back to the path of moderation. But that's not what I want. Vaharaya, what's the proof to that? As soon as there's some type of lapse in your Nazirite vow, what happens? What happens? Sin offering. And by the way, I'll point out, not our topic for today, but the Nazir also brings, every Nazir brings a sin offering. When does every Nazir bring a sin offering? At the culmination of his Nazirite vow. So I'm showing you one extreme example of the sin offering. But a sin offering is part of every single Nazir's offering. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us, I need you to find the path in the gray. I need you to find the path of moderation. Let me show you one last approach to this. And this last approach kind of navigates away a little bit. See, we had Rashi and Nechizkuni, who understand that it's vigilance. That really, again, the Nazir is being faulted for not being vigilant enough. You should have been more vigilant. Live life with awareness. We have the Gemara, Blazer HaKavar, and the Toldos Yitzchak, who are telling us, no, the problem is you're an extremist. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want extremism. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants gray. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to navigate the gray. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to be in the middle of the road. Not an extreme in either way. Find that balance between your neshama and your guf. But comes along number 8. In a third approach, which takes us on a dramatically different approach. This is a quote over here from the Beis Yisrael. The Beis Yisrael was the Ger Rebbe, and he says as follows. This is a really beautiful piece. Number 8, right-hand paragraph. Yadu sharava kadosh HaBeis Yisrael zchusi yagin aleinu hayamar belochiach mipsukim elu. So the Beis Yisrael learned an incredible life lesson from these psukim. What's the lesson? She'ein lo li adam lehis ya'ish klal b'chol matzav va'ofen shiyah. What's the lesson? The lesson is never despair, no matter what your life circumstances. Never despair, no matter what occurs. Now, how in the world does the Beis Yisrael see this from the psukim over here by Nazir? So get ready for this. He says, "Ki af acher shenitma ha-nazir bepesa pit'om." Even though the Nazir ultimately again becomes tamei suddenly, "Umitiva ha-olam yikansu bo hirhurei yeyush." Let's play this out. The Beis Yisrael makes such an amazing observation. Let's play this out for just a moment. So you have the Nazir. Again, who is this individual? One thing, you whatever you want to say about a Nazirus, one thing you have to give the individual credit for, which is?
He's trying.
He wants more holiness in his life. Meaning, no one becomes a Nazir for fun, right? No one becomes a Nazir because they're trying to show off. An Ed Nazirus is a very, very, very serious undertaking. So here you have an individual saying, Ribono Shel Olam, I want more out of life. I want more. I want to be holier. I want to be better. I want to lift myself up. And look, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm even willing to go ahead and suffer through the privation of these days in order to get myself to a higher, an elevated spiritual level. And then what happens? And then what happens? What happens is he's minding his own business, and then what happens? Nebuch? Reuven drops dead right in front of him. I apologize for being so crass, right? Reuven just dies, and now suddenly what happens to our Nazir? Right? He's tummy. Now what happens when he's tummy? Everything he built up until now, does what happens to it? It's gone. It's done. It is easy for him to fall into a state of despair. Look how hard I tried to build something in life. Look how hard I tried to gain some traction. Look how hard I tried to turn myself around. I want to be a better person. I know that I wasn't operating on all cylinders. I know that I wasn't living the life I needed to lead. I wasn't becoming the person I needed to become. And so yes, I adopted extreme behavior because I know that I need to turn it around. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the only thing I need from you is what? Is what? One thing I need from God, which is keep dead people out of my way. Which is not too much to ask. Right? Ribbono Shel Olam, just keep dead people out of my way. I'm not going to go to the cemetery. I'm not going to go to the Levites. Just keep dead people out of my way. I will do the rest of the heavy lifting. Don't let anyone die in my Dalet Amos. For 30 days, that's all I'm asking for. And then on day number 14, day number 17, day number 29, whatever it is, somebody drops dead right in front of the Nazir. And everything that he went ahead and amassed, and everything he worked on, suddenly comes crumbling down. Everything is lost. If you're the Nazir, what are you thinking to yourself? So I guess HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't value my work. I guess HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't feel that what I'm doing is all that important. Or I guess maybe I missed the mark. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I didn't do it right. And it is easy for a person to fall, says the Beis Yisrael, into a state of what he calls Yeyosh. Despondency and despair. Because when you work towards something in life and it doesn't materialize, especially when it doesn't materialize because of circumstances beyond your control, I say to myself, Ribono Shel Olam, what do you want of me? I'm trying. I'm doing my best. I'm putting in all of the effort I possibly can. Again, we had a deal. All I needed from you is don't let anyone die within my Dalet Amos for 30 days. And clearly, again, you didn't have that happen. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what am I supposed to do? So look what he says. He goes on, he says, Yikantzu bohir hu rei yeyosha omrim lo. Rei, ki ein ma'asecha rutsuyin lefnei amakom. So what happens? It is easy for a person to say, well, I guess HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't value my avoda. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't value my effort. Maybe what I'm doing is not good enough. Or maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe at the end of the day, what God is telling me is, you're not a Nazir. You were never a Nazir. You're never going to be a Nazir. Don't try to push yourself towards some greater life of holiness, because guess what? You're not going to make it. You're not cut out for holiness. Bochacha berur lekach. Sharnit meis bepeta pisom. Hari lechashim nashvayim timucha. Shalotucha lizar ulishar mitumazos. So again, and especially, see, sometimes in life I work on something and it doesn't materialize. I know, I didn't work hard enough. I was lazy. I could have pushed a little harder, but it didn't happen. But here again, this is clearly beyond my control. This is a divine rejection. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling me, I don't want you. I don't want your avodah. What am I supposed to take from that? How am I supposed to feel about myself after that? And look what the Beis Yisrael writes. Afal pikein amra Torah, v'kidesh es rosho bayom hahu. What does the Torah say? What does the Torah say? So again, remember, the Pasuk says that on the eighth day, after I go through the purification process, by the way, the seven-day purification process is not unique to a Nazir. The seven-day purification process is the biblical purification process for anyone who comes in contact with a corpse. It's not unique by the Nazir. So what does the Nazir do? After he finishes his 7 days of purification process, he shows up at the Kohen, day number eight. And what happens on day number eight? V'kidesh es rosho bayom hahu. What happens on day number eight? What happens day number eight? You start again. You pick yourself up, you dust yourself off, and you start again. He goes on. Afapikin Amr Torah, V'kidesh Estor Shob Ayom Ahu, Ya'azov Kolech Heshbonos. Sometimes in life you have to stop thinking so much. Ye'lechna kisuma ba'aruba achar Hashem Yisbarach. V'yizak, Mehayom, Hineni Maschil B'Naziros Chadasha. So what does a person say? What does the Nazir say on day number eight? I'm ready to try again. Because sometimes there is only one alternative in the aftermath of failure. And that's not, it's not wallowing in it. And it's not decrying it. And it's not lamenting over it. But it's dusting yourself off and simply beginning all over again. Mehayom hineni maschil b'nezirus chadasha. But 1 second, it's not finished. Sometimes it's not enough just to go ahead and begin again. What else do you have to do? What does the pasuk say? Look, go back to number one for just a moment. Keep your place in number eight. Go back to number one for just a moment. What does the pasuk say? Let me just finish this section. What does the pasuk say? V'hayomim harishonim yiplu. What is it, v'hayomim harishonim yiplu? What does that mean?
Start over.
So not just do you start over again, but what? You have to let go of the feelings of failure. You see, sometimes in life, we gather the strength to start over again. But you know, people start over again. But if you're tethered to the failures of the past, if you carry with you the baggage of the failures of the past, so you know what the issue is? We all know this because we all experience this. Is your redo is not really a redo. Your second start is not a fresh one. Why? Because I'm going into this second start with the baggage of the first failed initiative. So says the Beis Yisrael, something so profound. The Nazir is not just the Nazir. You know who the Nazir is? The Nazir is any person who sets out on life to accomplish something great. I want to accomplish, you know, every once in a while, you actually find something really special to do. We occupy ourselves with a whole lot of stuff. Most of it, to be honest, is not so significant. Most of it is not so meaningful. And a lot of it is even stuff that we should be putting our efforts into. But sometimes in life, we sink our teeth into something really dramatic, beautiful, holy, and wonderful. Something really meaningful. And I put in my efforts, and I work, and I work, and I work, and I work, and then I fail. I fail. But I don't fail because of my laziness. I don't fail because of my inaction. If I fail because of my inaction, I'm going to own that. I know that there's no great philosophical issue over there. I know why I failed. But sometimes the things that I want don't materialize, and simply don't materialize because of circumstances beyond my control. So what do I do? So you know what happens sometimes? What happens sometimes? We begin to philosophize, right? We begin to think about, well, what is the emotion I'm telling me? What's the message? What's the this? What's happening? I want to tell you something amazing. Do you know, Judaism doesn't really believe in philosophy. Judaic philosophy, as codified by the Rambam, was a response to philosophy that was advanced in other religions. Right. Judaism doesn't believe in philosophy for one simple reason. Do you know what philosophy yields?
More
philosophers, who in turn yield more philosophy. And you could spend a life philosophizing and accomplishing absolutely nothing. Judaism is an actional religion. Sometimes we believe, think less, ponder less, and do more. Sometimes in life we engage in the most magnificent and beautiful undertakings, and they fail, and they fail. And I don't understand why they failed. Because, Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm doing your work. I'm doing the Lord's work. I'm just trying to go ahead and make my life better, the life of my family better, my kehillah better, my community better, mankind better, whatever it is. And yet, I'm not getting any traction. Ribbono Shel Olam, what's happening over here? And I can philosophize and wonder, what is Kadosh Baruch Hu trying to tell me? The Beis Yisrael says, sometimes, don't worry so much about what Kadosh Baruch Hu is telling you. Sometimes the only thing to do is what? Try again. Try again. Ubayom Ashmini v'kidesh esrosho bayomahu. Sometimes the response to failure is get back up, dust yourself off, and try again. But trying again is only going to work if what? If what? Ki v'hayomim harishonim yiplu. Sometimes ultimately again, the only way to move on is to let go. Sometimes the only way to have a real second chance at things is if you let go of the failures of the first time around. Why? Look how that pasuk ends in number one. Ki tamei nizro. Because that failure, that failed nizirus, that's tamei. You know, the halach is if somebody's tamei, they're going to the mikvah. So I'm going to mikvah, I'm tamei. Only one issue. I'm bringing my pet sheretz into the mikvah with me, right? Leaving aside the hygienic issues, right? I'm bringing my pet rat into the mikvah with me, right? And I'm holding him in my hand and I'm going up and down and vidui and brachas and everything. What's my status? What's my status? Tamei, right? That's what Chazal call tovel v'sheretz biyado. A person goes to the mikvah and there's a source of impurity in his hand. There's an incredible metaphor there. Because a lot of us go to the mikvah, a lot of us purify ourselves, but we're holding on to the things that render us impure. So the Torah says over here, Nazir, it's okay. It's okay. You tried to do something good, you failed. Why did you fail? I don't know. It's a good question. And again, I want to point out, as much as I'm telling you not to think, we have to think. Meaning, when we do fail at things in life, we do have to ponder why those initiatives failed. But don't let the pondering paralyze. Sometimes you have to ponder and act, because I want to just tell you something. Pondering gets you nowhere. Questioning gets you nowhere. It's an important exercise. We're thinking beings, so of course we ponder, of course we think, of course we introspect, all those things. But you have to do those things concurrently while you're getting back up, dusting yourself off as well. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Nazir, who represents the person who is engaging in some type of dynamic life activity, to go ahead and bring Kedusha into his or her life, you failed. How do you react in the aftermath of failure? Get back up, dust yourself off, and try again. But it's not enough just to try again. You only have a chance of being successful if V'hayomim harishonim yiplu ki tamein Israel. You have to let the past failures go. You can't let them define you. You can't carry them around in your heart, in your soul, for the rest of your life, because it's tamei. It's tamei. And as long as you hold that source of tumah, as long as you hold the tumah of those past failures in your hand, you're never going to be tahor. You're never going to reach that level of ritual purity. And he quotes in the left-hand paragraph a beautiful idea. Kach Amar Shlomo HaMelech. This is a famous vart. Sheva Yipol. I mean, number 8, left-hand paragraph. Sheva Yipol Tzadik V'kam Urishayim Yikashlu Berad. Shlomo HaChreis in Mishlei. Literally, again, 7 times the tzadik falls and he gets back up, but the wicked stumble over their evil. So he writes over here, V'hainu. She efshar labasra v'dam b'lo nefilos. By the way, this is such an important, this should be a bumper sticker. She efshar labasra v'dam b'lo nefilos. It is impossible to have a life without failures. By the way, this, as an aside, is the, hands down, the most important lesson that we teach our children as well. Sometimes parents convey to children, tzaddikal, you're always going to be successful. That goes back to our tzaddik shir. That's a different discussion, right? Right? You're always going to be successful. If you tell your kids they're always going to be successful, you are setting them up for some significant failure. Instead, we teach our children, failure is par for the course. We all fail. We all fall. We all stumble. So he says, he efshar labasar v'dam b'lo nefilos. There is no such thing as a life without failures. Ki heina tzadikim, veheina rasha'im nofum. Everyone falls. The righteous fall, the wicked fall. So wherein lies the difference? It's a famous idea. Va'nafkamina shereinehem, sha'at tzadik eino nishar benifilaso ela vikam. What's the difference? If everyone falls, then what's the difference between a tzadik and a rasha? So Shlomo Melech says something very profound. Sheva yipol tzadik. The tzadik, by the way, doesn't just fall once. He says the tzaddik could fall multiple times. But what makes the tzaddik a tzaddik and the rasha a rasha? The tzaddik, when he falls, v'kam, gets back up. The rasha stays back down. The rasha lives in his failures. The rasha wallows in his failures. The rasha never lets go of the failures of the past. He's carrying it around with him all the time. And that's why the rasha is always tamei. The tzaddik falls because he's a human being. But he gets back up, dusts himself off, and begins again. And not only does he begin again, but he recognizes that if he has a shot at being successful in this second time around, it only happens if V'hayomim harishonim yiplu. You have to let go of the past failures. You have to let go of the past missteps. You have to let go of the past nidrei nezeros that just never culminated in anything significant. Why? Ki tamei nizro. Because it's impure. And if you hold the impurities of life with you, then a life of Kiddush, a life of Tara, is simply never attainable. There are many others. Let me just share with you one last piece to build on this. So the interesting part is, okay, so now I understand that I fall, I have to get back up, and I have to go ahead and let go of the failures of the past. There's only one problem, which is, but how do I reconcile all of that time and all of that effort spent on something that never came to fruition? So I want to show with you something amazing. Take a look at number 9. Everything is in our Torah. The Pasuk says, this is number 9, still the Nazir, but this is at the end of his Neder Nazirus. V'hinif osa akoin tenufa lefnei Hashem, kodesh ul akoin, al chazea tenufa v'ashokat shuma. So again, this is talking about a regular Nazir. No one died, you know, Bepesa Pitom immediately. He finished out his Neder Nazirus. These are the culminating, these are the finalizing sacrificial steps. So what happens? V'achar yishtaha Nazir Yayin. And when ultimately, again, his Neder Nazirus comes to an end, then what? The Nazir is permitted to drink wine. The Al-Sheikh HaKadosh in number 10 asks such a profound question. V'diktigu ha-mefarshim, number 10. Madua ne'emar kan ha-nazir. What? So you understand how the pasuk reads? The Nazir will go ahead and bring his karbanos. He'll effectively end his neder nazirus. It's done. And then what? Then he could drink wine. But what does it say? It says, v'achar yishta ha-nazir yayin. Then the Nazir will drink wine. Why is that textually incorrect? What should it say? He's not a Nazir anymore. Let it just say, Va'achar Yishta Yayin, or Va'achar Yishta Ish Yayin. Why does it, it's such a profound question. Why does it call him a Nazir in the aftermath when his Neder has already come? His Neder is already complete. Why does it still call him Nazir? Look what the Al-Sheikh says. Shari Nazir in a Shosi Yayin. Remember again, Nazir is not allowed to drink wine. The Kaitse Tikra in a Nazir, Bavol Ishtos Yayin. Listen to this. The Mechevan Shebizman Tov, Kibel Al Atzmo Lihios Nazir. V'yisnai b'kedusha b'tara, l'chein nikra b'tora nazir, af ki shegamar nizirusav. Because anyone who conducts himself like a nazir carries that kedusha, that holiness with him, even when the official nazirus comes to an end. Ki gam kishuhu nofel mimadregaso. Even when I fall from my status, my elevated status, nishar etzlo min hakidusha shenaka shekana. That should be shekana benafsho be'ez kabalaso. Ashik says something amazing. He says sometimes we think that when we fall and when we fail, so now that I'm a failure, everything I did up until this point in time is meaningless. It's not true, says the Ashik. Whenever a person engages in positive dynamic activity, even if it does not go ahead and result in the desired results, even if I don't reach the finish line, just because I quote-unquote fail does not mean that there is not a positive takeaway from the experience. So the Torah is telling us as follows. Nazir, you're a Nazir for 30 days. Nazir for 30 days. Okay, you're done. Now what happens when you're done? So we would think, okay, you're done. You're a regular guy. You're not a regular guy. Because after being a Nazir for 30 days, that you are vested with a heightened level of holiness. And that holiness now follows you into the rest of your life as well. Even though you are no longer an active Nazir, that Kiddusha is with you. And it's not just true here. It's true what we said before as well. So then our previous Nazir, who was the individual who started a life initiative, and then what? And then failed. And then failed. So you say, you failed. You gain. So what happens? You see, when we start life initiatives, and they don't culminate the way we wanted them to, so I feel like I've wasted my time, I've wasted my efforts, I've wasted my resources, I didn't reach the finish line, I didn't accomplish what I wanted to. And what does the Kadosh Baruch Hu tell us? Anytime a Jew engages in positive dynamic activity, even if you quote-unquote fail, even if you don't reach the desired finish line, even if you don't accomplish what you set out to, just understand that you've acquired holiness. Just understand that you've grown. Just understand that you are a different person, even if you're quote-unquote not successful. Even if the initiative, as you originally saw it, does not pan out the way you had imagined it. So in my mind, I'm a failure. In my mind, I wanted to accomplish A. I didn't accomplish it. Okay, I'm going to get the chizuk, I'm going to dust myself off, lift myself back up. But again, now you want me to forget about the past failure. How could I forget about the past failure? I spent all of that time, sometimes all of that money, all of those resources doing something that didn't come to fruition. So understand, just because life initiatives don't come to fruition in the way we thought they would, doesn't mean that they're a waste of time. The Jew grows through everything. Every life experience becomes part of my persona. Every life experience adds another brick to my personalistic edifice. Every single life experience that I have somehow adds to my character, adds to my traits, adds to my midos, adds to my strength. There is no such thing as a wasted experience. There is no such thing as a failure in life. There are initiatives that do not succeed the way we had originally thought. I'll say it differently. There are initiatives that are success challenged. But there are no such thing as failures. Because every circumstance in life gives us something. And that's the pshat. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us, when you fail, get back up. V'kidish es rosho bayom ahu. Get back up. Start again. V'hayomim harishonim yiplu. Don't hold on to the pain of past failures. Because if you do, ki tamei nizro, you're holding on to tuma. So what do I do with my past quote-unquote failures? Recognize that even in the failures, there's growth. Even in the failures, there's accomplishment. Even in the failures, there's something dramatically amazing. So if you bring this all together, it turns out that from this little section of the Nazir, our regular Nazir, who just happened to become Tamei by being in the wrong place at the wrong time, we learn a variety of incredible life lessons. Lesson number one, Zihirus. Life is a long 120 journey on the edge of a cliff. If I'm not vigilant with every step I take, I'm going to fall off. Life requires attentiveness and vigilance when we talk, when we act, when we walk, when we choose. And the moment, we all know this, the moment you take your eye off the wheel, the moment you stop measuring your steps, is Nebuch, the moment that I end up making such dramatic life mistakes. Message number two. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want angels, he wants men. Doesn't want angels, he wants human beings. A successful Judaic life is not an ascetic one. It's one in which a person is able to find the middle path, the path of moderation, where I'm able to sustain and nurture the guf, but not at the expense of the neshama. Instead, when I'm able to go ahead and create this synergistic partnership between body and soul, because by sustaining the body, I sustain the soul. By sustaining the soul, I sustain the body. He or she who reaches that middle ground is truly living the paradigm of existence. But yet again, recognizing that sometimes I have to go to extremes in order to be able to come back to the middle. And lastly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaches us a dramatic idea. The Nazir represents all of us. Any person who wants to accomplish something great, something meaningful in life, and it just doesn't pan out. What do you do when your life initiatives fail? It's a three-pronged lesson. Number one, the Torah tells us, V'kidish es rosho bayomahu. What do you do in the aftermath of failure? Don't cogitate, don't ponder, don't question, don't wonder, don't philosophize. You can do all of those things, as long as simultaneously you're getting back up, starting again. But it's not enough just to get back up and start again. V'hayomim harishonim yiplu. You have to learn to let go of this pain of past failures. Why? Ki tamei nizro. Because at the end of the day, they're tamei, and they will prevent purity from devolving upon you. Holding on to the pain of past failures prevents second tries from truly materializing. But how do I let go of the pain of past failures? It hurts so much to know that I wasted the time, the resources, the effort, because there's no such thing as a waste. The reality is there's no such thing as a failure. As the Al-Sheikh tells us, V'achar yishteh ha-nazir yayin. Even when the neder nezirus is done, the nazir is still vested with the kiddusha of his 30-day journey. Even when we fail, we are still vested with the holiness of our effort. We're still vested with the holiness of all of our efforts, of just trying to be something more. The initiative was success challenged. Success challenged doesn't translate into failure. Every single thing we do in life aids us or adds to us in some way. Some ways we can see, some ways we can't. And with that knowledge, that gives us the chizuk to get back up, that gives us the chizuk to dust off, and it gives us the chizuk to try again.